You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Listening to Mornings with Pat Brightlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back. Happy Monday. New time you're hearing me, but here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. If you're looking for news that takes a deep dive into the region, our community here in southeastern Wisconsin, look no further than Dan Schaefer. He's Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. He stops by once a week to give me something uniquely southeastern Wisconsin, and today he does not disappoint.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. And today I'm talking about one of my favorite topics in and around Milwaukee, infrastructure.
Oh, my gosh. The sexiest of political topics.
I know. You know, really, really try to calm your jets here before we get into this conversation. But there was a story out from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in late July about one of my least favorite intersections in the city. It is downtown right along the lakefront where you see Lincoln Memorial meet Clybourne and Michigan. If you have traveled to any of Milwaukee's festivals down at the Summerfest grounds over the summer here, you will probably know that this is not a fun intersection to navigate. If you are driving south, it's hard to figure out where to get on the Hone Bridge or to head 94 West. It is kind of a disaster and has been since they redeveloped it as part of the Lakefront Gateway project. But now the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, yes, the very same organization that initially designed this intersection, is looking at a fix. They're looking at redesigning this, and they're saying, yeah, we recognize we screwed up here. Maybe they're not saying it in those exact terms, but we're recognizing that some changes need to be made here to make this better for drivers coming through, make it better for pedestrians in the region, make it better for visitors who can be very justifiably confused by this intersection. You know, I'm a city of resident of city of Milwaukee, have been for the better part of the last 15 years. I still get confused coming to this intersection all the time when I go downtown as well. So clearly it needs some work.
Oh, I completely agree. The I've lived in Milwaukee for about 20 years, and that intersection provided such moments of anxiety of, am I going to cause a traffic jam or am I going to Madison by accident right now? So, yeah, if I know one thing about you, Dan, it's that I know you are an award-winning journalist. You love, love, love 90s music, and you have a deep-seated rage for 794 and that intersection. So it's no doubt that you want to talk about this today. And also, it's surprising that they're finally coming out with some sort of answer because the can has sort of been kicked down the road.
Right. So they redeveloped this intersection. The Lakefront Gateway Project is what they call it. So it's kind of, you know, the gateway to the city, right, mm-hmm. is the way they characterize it. It was redeveloped about a decade ago under County Executive Chris Abley and Governor Scott Walker. You know, they redeveloped a bunch of things, opened up some space for redevelopment. Not all of that redevelopment has been realized, but in doing so, they, you know, created a new intersection. And when they did that, they didn't do it well. And so there's other pieces of this, too. Several months ago, the project secured $16.5 million for additional funding, a lot of which would go towards public infrastructure, and particularly pedestrian infrastructure. If you try to walk across any of those intersections down there, that is a nightmare.
No, thank you. No. I don't understand how.
Yep. So there is kind of like the one pedestrian bridge if you're going to the Milwaukee Art Museum that you can take if you're parking with one of the lots there, one of the street parking places to walk from downtown to the lakefront. But it's just like overall, there is this issue that Milwaukee has of bridging like the downtown Central Business District area with the downtown lakefront. And we need more pedestrian options there for people to walk across safely and get to events like Summerfest, get to places like the Milwaukee Art Museum. And obviously for people who are driving, commuting, whatever it is, going to festivals down there, there needs to be a better way for people to get around more safely and in a much less confusing fashion. And this also connects to the conversation around 794. As you mentioned, I am opposed to, or I'm supporting of the plan to remove negative 794 mm-hmm. and bring it back to the grid. This is a place that would really benefit from that too, yeah. because it's not just people jumping on the highway in, you know, whether it's getting on the Hone Bridge to head south, getting on 94 to head west, whatever it might be. Opening that up would create more opportunities for an actual grid in that part of the city instead of just like on ramps flying in every direction.
And that's something we also don't talk about is the confusion it can provide visitors, because not just the 794 thing, not just the gateway to the city design, but if you're driving 1 minute west, you then may hit the Marquette interchange, which is not as confusing, but still can be a daunting task in its design. So yeah, I feel like Milwaukee was like, why don't we build the most confusing roadways in a very short distance just to make it fun?
Yeah, there was actually this story in Politico from about 10 years ago. It was like a long feature story, and it was on Milwaukee, and it was about our highway system here, and the headline for it was Overpasses, a Love Story.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's expensive. It's yes. extraordinarily expensive, too.
Oh, that's
we should
right.
also put
it's
that in.
It's not free.
Yes. So the proposal to redevelop 794 in its current footprint in dollars that I think are about 5 years old at this point, so I'm sure it's higher. That was a $300 million project. $300 million to redevelop 794 in its current footprint. And I think this Lakefront Gateway project, when it was initially conceived, was in the hundreds of millions of dollars too. Redeveloping the Hone Bridge was in the hundreds of millions of dollars too. We have the 94 East-West Freeway reconstruction project. Still hasn't officially cut the ribbon on that. That's going to be getting underway. That's $1.5 billion as well. So we spend so much money on road building. And I think one of the organizations that I think does not get enough accountability from those of us in the media, those of us in the public, is the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
And they're probably fine with that right now.
They are probably fine with that. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, Greg.
You can catch more of Dan's work by going to civicmedia.us/news or going to the Recombobulation Area website and subscribing today. Like I said, award-winning journalism, deep dives into topics that directly affect our community, and it's all there for a very affordable price at the Recombobulation Area. You're listening to WAUK's Local Report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to WAUKradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 6:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin. I know we're talking about them a lot, but there's a reason to, because the Brewers are the best club in Major League Baseball right now. And it's not just the winning streaks or how great it feels to be in first place, although first place is great. But there's something magical, something special about this team. And Maggie Dawn sat down with Brewers president Rick Schlesinger to talk about all the things that make up this wonderful, wonderful team. It's a family vibe. We all feel it. But she started with the most important question of all.
What is the secret sauce? How is this miracle in Milwaukee happening? I don't think anybody could have predicted how fabulous this team is doing, the best of baseball.
Yeah, if I knew it, I would bottle it. I would right. sell it. I would become a billionaire. It's really, you know, a combination of so many things. And, you know, when you're talking about 162 games and you're talking about, you know, between 40 and 50 players that come up to the major leagues and play for you during the course of a season, so many things have to go right for so long for this. It's not a small hot streak. It's a 2.5 month period of sustained excellence. You look at the culture, you look at the coaches, you look at the front office and how they've brought people, the trades they've made for Priester and Andrew Vaughn, Woodruff coming back from the injury list, Jacob Mizorowski coming from the minor leagues and being dominant, all these little stories, and you you take them and you add a good group of players that we won 92 games last year. And, you know, there's the special sauce. It's the culture, it's the talent, it's the energy. You said something offline that I think is true, is sometimes, you know, the youth of the team can work to your advantage. You don't obsess about what could go wrong because you may have not experienced failure. You're just enjoying the moment. You're focusing on then and now and not what could bad happen. And you're relieved and you're sort of free from some of the clutter that can, you know, cloud your judgment or make you stress or feel the pressure. They're just enjoying the experience, enjoying playing. And it's a great team to watch and we're having a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, when you joined me first, we talked about the Brewers' road to a series is the lightning in the bottle season. And I think a lot of folks are feeling like, man, maybe this is it. But I love the fact that every single guy on that squad, when you hear them in interviews, they all clearly have gotten the message from Pat and others and each other. We focus each game, one at a time, and try not to get overwhelmed by the moment. I really appreciate that. What sort of financial impact, how big of a deal is this for a smaller market club like the Brewers when you're doing so well? You got a breakout star in the Miz. You got a lot of attention, a lot of eyeballs, more TV time. Is this a big boon, and how much of a difference does it make?
Yeah, it's significant because, you know, the biggest source of revenue for the team like the Brewers is ticket revenue. So when the tickets are selling, and obviously the variable price of the tickets are based on supply and demand, the ticket sales have been fantastic. Our merchandise sales are off the charts. Our food and beverage, our parking, all the game day revenue is great. Our engagement on social media, all the measurements we use, Maggie, to judge fandom, are really at historic highs. Our TV ratings were second highest in Major League Baseball among the 30 clubs. We have the number one social media engagement in all of Major League Baseball. This translates into the great expectations that the fans have, which we want and we want to cultivate, helps us already for next year as we start selling season tickets and start planning for 2026. At the same time, you know, we haven't won anything yet. There's no prizes for having the best record on August 20th. You know, there's one prize, and that's winning the World Series. We have not done that. So a lot of meaningful games left to go. And, you know, invariably, we've got, 41 games left, plus as many postseason games as we can muster. There's going to be some heartbreak. There's going to be some challenges. We're going to go through a rough spot. But the end of the day is, I think this team is got some magic. And whether that's Euchre looking down on us, or just some pixie dust that was sprinkled on us at the beginning of the year after the horrendous start in New York. Who's to say? But, you know, we're going to have fun and ride it and enjoy the moment, and let's keep the moment going.
You mentioned that the Brewers have the number one social media engagement. I follow the account. It is hilarious. It is entertaining. It is inspiring. You guys make great hay with things like Pat's Pocket Pancakes. And are those constructed, or are you just letting those moments happen organically and then leaning in?
Yeah, I mean, to work, especially in the universe of social media, it's got to be authentic. And it can't be created. It can't be manufactured, because people can sniff it out a mile if it's something contrived. So literally, you know, I'm watching the interview that Pat Murphy gave, and the reporter asked him, and he literally pulls out a pancake from his pocket. And I'm like, okay. And I thought that was funny. I didn't realize it would go viral. And then, you know, Pat's great because he's very genuine. He'll say what's on his mind. He doesn't have a filter. And the reality is these moments are really from him. And he's the team leader. He's an important part of our brand. And when he comes up with something funny, we're going to go with it. And then obviously things like Yelly and the Bobby Euchre bat,
Yeah. That
was all Yelly. And we just decided, let's promote that. It was a great story. There's so many great little stories. You know, Andrew Vaughn, this guy from the White Sox that had been left for dead.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we trade for him because our pitcher wanted out, and he becomes, you know, Babe Ruth. So you can't craft it. You can't predict it. You ride it, and, you know, it's a team game, and these are team stories, and we're just having a lot of fun with it, because at the end of the day, baseball, it's supposed to be fun, right? At the end of
Yes.
the day, we're not curing cancer, we're not saving lives, we're making things a little more enjoyable for people in Wisconsin, and let's have fun with it.
If you want to listen to that entire interview, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Maggie Dawn Show and find the episode called Data Wars and Baseball Magic. There you'll hear the entire discussion, because they don't just talk about the magic of the team, but they also talk about the financial impact on the community and future expansion possibilities. So go to civicmedia.us/shows. Stick around, because coming up on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, Pat is going to be having Brittany Merlot with the weather, our very own John and Gordy, as well as State Representative Francesca Hong. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29. Listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I am back, and here is what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. For the past 2 weeks, I've been playing selections for you from the Maggie Dawn Show on her special episode regarding cryptocurrency. And there was a lot of discussion about preparing yourself, getting to know the idea of crypto, as well as what we can do to protect ourselves and some of the problems that are involved with influencing and corruption with this form of payment. And I want to bring it back down to Wisconsin and the fact that most of us, I don't think any of us, have the ability to call the president, a congressman, or a senator and tell them what to do. We're not that lucky. We're not that rich. I mean, I'm not. I don't know about you. But my point is, how are we going to be protected from the dangers of cryptocurrency? Well, State Senator Kelda Royce from Madison has a piece of legislation that she has authored about taking care of one specific area of cryptocurrency, its access, and possibly people's loss of money.
I had a conversation with a stockbroker. This is months ago. And we were talking about crypto. And I said, the whole thing just makes me twitchy because it just seems like it is ripe for scams and to be abused and for people to get ripped off. And I said, there's just something about crypto that seems immoral to me. And what he said was, morality aside, this is a product that has who has people who want to buy it. So therefore, it's okay. We have a product people want to buy. Morality aside, concerns aside, let's just sell this. That did not make me feel better.
Well, yeah, I can certainly understand why not. And I think, you know, your instincts about crypto are not wrong. It is a product that has incredible potential to scam people, right? And to facilitate criminal activity.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I'm pretty libertarian about letting adults do the things that they want to do, as long as they're not harming others. And so if people want to, you know, buy lottery tickets or, you know, smoke cigarettes or,
right,
you know, buy crypto, what's it to me? If they want to invest in risky stocks, I think that's okay. But what is not okay is to see criminals using this as a way to just wipe out people's life savings and to say we're going to allow this as a product category to be totally unregulated, aside from every single other way of transmitting money is regulated. And so that's kind of where I am. It's like, if you want to do it, that's fine. But we're going to make sure that we are putting some guardrails and some regulations around this so that people aren't especially vulnerable.
And I think it's important that folks understand that there are people already who have been wiped out by crypto.
Yes.
And they have lost everything.
These stories will break your heart. You know, because with the rise of these crypto kiosks, you might have seen them in a gas station or a diner somewhere as you're driving around Wisconsin, they've popped up like seemingly out of nowhere. And they are used by internet scammers to take people's money. And it's virtually untraceable. Once you put your money in there, it's gone. It's going to an anonymous wallet, to a scammer, to a fraudster, and you will never see that money again. And if you listen to the stories of victims, as I have, you realize just how dangerous these crypto kiosks can be for people who are vulnerable to fraud, which is all of us, yep. right? Any one of us yep. could be caught up as a victim in these scams.
And this is not me defend. I know so little about crypto, I couldn't even defend it if I could. It is the regulation that people want to put in place on this form of payment flies in the face directly of what is, quote, supposed to make it so great. There's no regulation. It's decentralized. All these great words that make it sound like freedom, but really what it is, it allows the really, really smart people who know this form of payment, who know computers, to go in and to do what they can do. And really, as you said, kind of put us over a barrel because there's no FDIC for crypto.
Yes, your money is not guaranteed. So you can think about it. It's like buying an incredibly risky stock, or even buying like a stock option or a future, right? Something that's even more separated from any asset that like bears value, right? So it's a stock market that's completely unmoored from any form of an asset like real estate or a company or a currency. So in that sense, you know, there are certainly investors who specialize in this kind of very high risk enterprise, and I think, you know, that's fine, but people need to know what they're getting into. The problem with these crypto kiosks is twofold. Number one, criminals use them to move money in an untraceable way. So if you are a drug dealer, if you are a trafficker,
what a great way to launder money.
Right. You can take your ill-gotten gains and disappear them. And there's really no way to catch it or for our government to get the money back. Now, and the other way is that it just makes it so much easier for scammers to target particularly vulnerable people. So what you hear a lot of are these catfishing scams, right? Where people pretend that they are in love with you. They target someone who is lonely, someone mm-hmm. who is isolated, someone who may be vulnerable. They maybe lost their spouse. Their children live far away. They don't have a strong support system, right, where they're living. And so they're isolated and they're on the computer and someone, you know, approaches them and makes them think that they're in love. And then all of a sudden, oh, my sister has a surgery, yep. or I need mm-hmm. money for this. Yep. And they are, you know, piece by piece giving their life savings away to a scammer. And when the time comes and they realize it's been a scam, there's just no recourse.
Yeah, it's gone.
And that is totally heartbreaking. That should never happen. But crypto kiosks make it really, really easy for the criminals.
Thank you to State Senator Calder Royce for taking the time to sit down and talk to us about legislation that is designed to protect us, you know, the people. It's a two-part interview, so if you want to listen to the entire thing, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Search for Matt and Air on Air and look for the episode entitled You Can't Make Money on Crimes. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin. By now you know I'm a fan of the Brewers, and earlier I played for you an excerpt of an interview that Maggie Dawn did with Rick Schlesinger, who's the president of the baseball team, but now I want to switch gears and move it on over to our very own Mike Clemens. He's our sports reporter here at Civic Media. Along with Jimmy Cuska and Chad Holmes, they cover all the sports here in Wisconsin, but Mike goes all over the country. He's always on the road, always getting us the news we need so we can stay up to speed on everything going on with our beloved teams here in this state. And every Friday he stops by the Don Rosen Show, and they always have a good talk and what's going on, especially with the Packers, who finished up their preseason this past weekend. But first, Don starts with a story about the Harlem Globetrotters.
I came across a very interesting statistic. Do you remember the Harlem Globetrotters always played the team, the Washington Generals? Remember that? It was kind of...
Yeah, and they always play Milwaukee on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Or New Year's Eve, I believe, yeah.
And every game, the Washington Generals would lose to the Harlem Globetrotters. As a matter of fact, they lost 2,495 times in a row before the Generals accidentally beat the Globetrotters January 5th, 1971. How did that happen? They lost.
And they were all fired the next day.
the Washington Generals. All right, let's talk sports. Let's talk local sports here. And Packers-Seahawks final preseason game.
Yeah, so they had a joint practice session where the Seahawks got here a couple days early, and they got onto the field. And something that you don't normally see, but Mike McDonald, the head coach of the Seahawks, it's like his second year, and Matt LaFleur, they get both these teams together, and they have a little discussion of rules of engagement. And, you know, here's what we're going to do in today's practice. Here's what we're looking for. Okay, break, and here we go. So Sam Darnold, who used to play for the Vikings last year, now is the quarterback of the Seahawks, he and his guys go down on one end of the field, and they take on the Packers' first-team defense. And Jordan Love, the quarterback for the Packers, who's coming back from thumb surgery from just a week ago, he did a little 7-on-7. There weren't any linemen, you know, just throwing some passes. He kind of struggled with that. He was like 3-for-12. And then Malik Willis took over, and they did 11-on-11. I mean, they're playing football out there and almost full tackling in this practice. So you would see, you know, like a running play from the Packers or a pass or something, and the whistles blow. And then all the chippiness, guys pushing and shoving after the whistle. So this went on for a couple of plays or so. And finally, Zach Tom, who he just signed to a brand-new contract for Green Bay, he's the right tackle, number 50, he'd had enough. And he starts shoving back. And then these Seahawks, they're shoving him back. And he just starts throwing punches. Like, okay, enough. And it's on. It's on, man. And all of a sudden, there's this huge pile, and there's guys on top of each other punching and throwing punches. Now, they got helmets and shoulder pads on, but, you know, you could crack a rib. You could break your fingers. And, you know, not good. So finally, they break it up. And the LaFleur, he takes Zach Tom and says, okay, you know, go to the bench. Go to the bench. So then Anthony Belton, the rookie that they drafted in the second round this year, 336 pounds, he lines up there. They have a few more plays. Again, there's some of this pushing and shoving after the play is over with, and he starts throwing. And then Tucker Kraft comes in there, the tight end, and these guys are punching. I mean, it was a big brawl. And the assistant coaches, what's funny is both benches are like emptied. Like even Christian Watson, he's coming back from a torn ACL. He ain't got a helmet or shoulder pads. Like, what are you doing running out there? What are you gonna do, man? But you know, it's team pride, team unity. These big pileups, and they're fighting with each other. And then afterwards, they got back and they finished through the practice. The Packers went over to their side of the field. I would stand on the sidelines in back of the line where I'm supposed to be, and the Seahawks had set up their Gatorade stations, and I'm around a bunch of these Seahawks, and pretty soon I see Elton Jenkins, the Packers center. He's not done. He's coming over there. Hey, hey, you. They start yelling and going after each other, and the coaches, man, they're not playing. You know, they got to go out there and get in between these guys and get them to settle down. So,
like a smackdown.
Yeah, SmackDown, yeah. Pro wrestling.
A lot of trash talking, and I don't know. I never understood fighting in the NFL because you're not hurting anybody with all that padding on. I
mean, the thing is that they, you know, they're competitive guys. It's been a long camp, and they kind of like to do it a little bit. They you know, they're football players, Don. They kind of like to mix it up. And one guy told me, he said, well, you know, Zach Tom told me what really irked him wasn't just even pushing and shoving after the whistle. He says, one of those dudes came back in our huddle. He started dipping in our huddle and saying blank. And he said, I'd had enough of it. He said, at some point, there's pride. Keyshawn Nixon, who's a defensive back, he said, you know, the thing is, he said, they don't fine you if you fight during practice, only during the game, see? You want to get into a fight? They're not going to have to pay a fine. So now's your chance.
Now, the NFL referees were at the Packers training camp, and you said they were telling the players and coaches something. Let us know what they were telling them.
They you know, the referees tour through the NFL to all the teams. And I think when they see a schedule like, oh, look, the Seahawks are going to be up there for a joint practice with the Packers. Here, we can kill two birds with one stone. So we'll talk to the Seahawks and we'll talk to the Packers, talk to the players. We play a video. We talk about rule changes. We answer their questions from both the coaches and the players. The one thing they're talking about, you know, they've got the new formations now for kickoffs that they've had for a couple of years. One rule change now is that if the kicking team kicks it what they call out of the landing zone, which is from the 20 to the goal line, then the receiving team now can get the ball at the 35.
Really?
Instead of the 30, yeah, out of the 35. So, see, what that encourages is the kicker to kick it there in a spot where a guy can catch it and make a return rather than just, you know, watch it roll around out of bounds.
You can always check out Mike Clemens on Don Rosen Show on Fridays. And if you can't hear it live, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Don Rosen Show and download the episode you want. Listen to it on your device whenever, wherever you like. Again, that's civicmedia.us/shows. Stick around because after the news, Pat welcomes Jane Matinere to the show to talk about everything coming up after his show on Matinere on Air. So you don't want to go anywhere. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To take your favorite WAUK shows with you on the go, download the free Civic Media app by going to the Apple or Google Play Store. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. Have an absolutely wonderful Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:29.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.